two Carolina Indie Fest interviews today, and we're going to jump right in. First up is Chapel Hill's Heat Preacher, who are playing Carolina Indie Fest at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford on Friday, September 29th at 6:15. This is Heartbeat Baby by Heat Preacher. After the interview, I'll play One and Only.
I've been feeling underground, buried by the things I've known. But if I had my way, I'd reap what I'd sown. So I'll keep going back to borrow lies I bend. If I can catch my breath, I keep this car.
JD Rust of the band Heat Preacher out of Chapel Hill. They're playing Friday, September 29th at Carolina Indie Fest. And just wanted to welcome you to the podcast. If you would just kind of go ahead and tell me about Heat Preacher. Tell me the Heat Preacher story and what it is that y'all do.
Yeah. So first of all, yeah, thank you for having me. I appreciate you taking the time to interview me about the story.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny. I played up in Boone, North Carolina for about 8 years. Kind of needed a change and moved to Carrboro, North Carolina, which, not everybody knows, is walking distance to Chapel Hill. So, essentially Chapelboro is what they call it. I knew I wanted to start another band, and after about a year, I had heard about an open mic at this place that used to be called The Station, and went there, and it was run by two of my friends now, Dylan and Rob, So I played there and, you know, kind of would say in the microphone, like, yeah, I'm trying to, you know, put a band together, and played some songs a few weeks, and they really liked it. Rob, our now drummer, reached out to Nick, our now guitarist, and said that he would like Nick to come by and check me out one of the nights that I was playing. And Nick liked what he heard. He thought that he could be a good contributing factor. And so the three of us got together and we were like, yeah, let's, you know, this makes sense. Let's keep writing. And so we needed a bass player. And so they reached out to Hugh Swasso, who is now our bass player. And we have our new baby.
Oh, congratulations.
And our older baby.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, they're awesome. Our newest just turned 4 weeks old.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Yeah, I forget exactly where we were. Hugh. So he happens to be one of the best guitarists I've ever seen. He's an amazing live performer. He plays regularly and had played regularly for a long time with Rob already, in a band that was at that time known as Skinny Bag of Sugar. Yeah, so they convinced him. They're just like, yeah, do you want to come play bass for us? And he was like, absolutely. It seemed, I think to him, at least at the time, he was like, yeah, it's kind of like a break from having to be like a front person, having to be the big entertainer. He just kind of gets to come hang out with, you know, his buddies and, you know, just mess around and write some stuff. So yeah, that's how the four of us started. I believe that was... I want to say that was February of 2016.
Okay.
So however many years ago that was, that's how long we've been playing together.
Yeah.
That's how it started. We had a couple songs I had in my back pocket, and then we wrote several. And honestly, we've just been having a blast ever since. We love hanging out together. It's really the hardest thing is just trying to focus and practice, because we're all very immature, goofy people.
Well, I checked out the music and I have a take on it, but I kind of want to hear from you, like how it is that you describe your music.
I think I tried a lot harder back when we were first starting. Now I just say, like, yeah, we're in a pop rock band, indie band, it's just hooks, catchy, simple, but fun, and we have a lot of fun playing it.
And pop rock is probably the thing that I would land on, but the thing that jumped out at me the most was that your arrangements really seem really very well thought out, and I'm curious if that's intentional, or like the songs feel like they could have been produced in so many ways, but you've landed on this, I don't know, there's like a skeleton to it and you're doing things that maybe not everybody would think to do. How does the writing process work? Do you come in with songs that fully realized, or does it come through a lot of trial and error, just, you know, stripping things down and adding things back? How does that work?
Yeah. Honestly, you're quite the detective. You kind of hinted at it. It was perfect. So I typically will, and I have to try really hard to do this, but what I'll do is I'll typically just on my phone, I'll do little voice recordings, little melodies and things as I kind of hear them in my head. I'm one of those people that will occasionally just drive in complete silence, because like driving in the car without music, or in the shower, or mowing the lawn, those are generally where most of the songs come from.
Yeah.
Those bass melodies, you know. And so I generally write a lot of the melody in a, like you're, it, and I use the exact word you said, skeleton kind of the song, you know, kind of at least coming with a chorus hook, you know, maybe it turns into the verse hook or whatever. But and I will listen to it and I'll play around with it in my head long before I ever touch a guitar. And then I'll just kind of, I'm not musically trained. I've been playing since I was guitar since I was 9 years old, but I still couldn't tell you, yeah. you know, exactly how everything goes. Which is, it's funny because I've written, there's one song in particular, it's on Spotify. It's called Small Town. It's one that, I had written, before I had moved. And, for whatever reason, it is the absolute hardest song for anybody to learn. And it all stems from me just kind of having this, like, almost like a stuttery kind of like, it doesn't feel right to start singing here. So I sing here, here and it's absolutely not where you're supposed to do it. And it's right. just because I don't know any better. Right. So
that's like one of the, some of the most interesting musicians are the ones that like, don't know what the hell's going on when it comes to theory or chord structure or whatever. You know, they get good enough to figure out, hey, this sounds good, but I don't know why. And the some of the coolest things happen in those cases.
Yeah, well, I must be fascinating then. I mean, you know, really roundabout way of saying, I generally come with like a skeleton of what the song could sound like. And I try really, really hard not to essentially write the whole thing in my head. You know, because then it's, if anybody comes up with anything else, I'll immediately be like, oh, that's wrong. Cause it's not what I was expecting. Right. So, so I try really hard not to do that because, you know, I mean, Nick, Rob and Hugh, they're all amazing, you know, they do know all of the music theory and everything. And they try and translate these things to me, you know, my contribution definitely lies, in different areas of the band. I try really hard not to just write their parts for them. You know what I mean? And they always do a much better job of what I had imagined. And so if I, just kind of keep that separate, you know, when I bring those skeleton ideas, everything just, I mean, we'll write a song and we'll finish one of those in like an hour, you know, like sometimes it just clicks. And there's probably been, you know, at least 10 songs, 10, 15 songs that, you know, we've learned completely. And we just realized that, you know, we didn't have that much fun writing it, or maybe we didn't write it so fast and we're just kind of like, maybe we just can it. Right. You were exactly right. It's a lot of, not knowing what I'm doing, them trying to translate it. We all put it together. And if we're having a lot of fun practicing it and we're getting excited when we play, then, that's how we know we're going to keep playing it.
Awesome. Awesome. Talk to me a little bit about, you know, what the live show is like, what people can expect to see when they come see you on September 29th.
We are, like I said, we're all pretty goofy people. You know, we have five kids between three of us, and you know, so we're all used to being, you know, dad clowns, you know, to our kids and stuff.
Entertainers.
Right? Yes. So entertainers. That's right. That's a better way of putting it. We have fun on stage, right? Like we get into it. We mess around with each other on stage. Like I'll try and make Nick miss a bunch of notes and stuff. You know, like I'll come over and try and like strum his guitar or like detune one of his strings or something, you know? I mean, like we do our best to, you know, play a perfect show, but part of the thing is that if we're not having fun while we're doing it, then why are we there? You know,
right. That's something I picked. You mentioned five or three kids. How many kids did you say?
I have two Nick has one. Our daughters are my oldest daughter, Marley, and his daughter, Zelly. They are 5 days apart, which was completely unplanned and really funny. But yeah, and then of course I have the newborn and Hugh. He has an 18-year-old daughter, and Jude is 10 now. I don't know. Jude's always like perpetually like 4 years old in my head. So
yeah.
I don't know. Yeah, and then Rob, he's kind of like the sixth child that we have.
Nice. Well, on your website it says that you guys are all like, you know, very, very very family focused. How does being in a working band while having the responsibility of families and children, how's that balance?
You know, it's not easy, right? This isn't what any of us do, to keep the lights on. I work for a solar company. Nick owns two bars. His wife owns a boutique clothing chain. Okay. It's a consignment and store, as well as like she'll fly around the country and the world and thrifted places. They're a power couple for sure. They're amazing. And then Hugh he's a mixed bag. He's a personal trainer. He's like an elite personal trainer. He's amazing. He has his own company. He'll get contracted from people. He had some mysterious big client that he was had to fly around with to train. Had to sign this big non-disclosure agreement.
Oh, wow.
And then Rob, he is he actually just got promoted in his job, but he's working for the School of Rock in Chapel Hill. Yeah, he absolutely loves it. He's a great teacher. He's always loved being a teacher, and he was a big part of summer camps for a long time, and it fills him with a lot of energy. And we all have things outside of the band, and then of course we have kids, and kids are a lot, and we owe a lot to our partners, for hanging in there while we have to go play a show. And it really just kind of, that it's what you want to be doing, it's something that, like, even if, honestly, I doubt if you look at money on recording and equipment and everything, I mean, we're certainly in the red,
Yeah.
So it's like, you have to love it. You have to know that it's something that kind of enriches you and revives you, refreshes you. And that's kind of what keeps us going, and having people supporting us that are great as well and supportive as well. Yeah.
Tell me about the name Heat Preacher. It's a very evocative name. It's a cool band name. Where did it come from?
We always get this question, right?
Yeah.
The answer that I give is the only reason that we are called Heat Preacher is because it was second on the list behind our preferred band name, which is Tennis Rodman. And the only reason that we didn't name ourselves Tennis Rodman was because it's already taken.
Oh.
Which we were absolutely devastated to hear. And not only that, it's taken by a rapper in Durham, North Carolina.
Oh, wow.
And so we're like, come on, man. Like, maybe we share it. And then, like, we've never approached Tennis about this. But
well, you need to see if you could play a show together at least.
I would like to. Like, you have no idea. There have been times where, we've played to an empty room somewhere, and we've just I've just been like, yeah, we're Tennis Rodman. We're from Austin, Texas. I don't know. You know, just live the lie a little bit.
Yeah. That. Yeah. Have fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. So we like Heat Preacher. I think it just kind of stems, you know, several of us have, you know, we're not religious anymore. At least I'm not, but, we all had pretty extensive religious backgrounds, varying degrees and stuff. And so maybe that was just kind of like in the back of the mind or something. But yeah, I don't know. Like it kind of felt like a little bit sexy, a little bit rock and roll, you know, which is kind of what we were, I don't know. We were told that we kind of had a sound like that, you know, and so it just fit. And so I think we stuck with it for that reason.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I always like to give everybody an opportunity to share their social media channels, website, you know, streaming platforms, wherever people can find your music and learn more about you, if you wanted to share that.
Yeah, thank you so much. Heatpreacher.com or heatpreacherband.com. I don't know. Nick does all this stuff with the websites and streaming platforms. We're on Spotify and all the major streaming platforms. What'd you say? Heat Preacher Band is our Instagram.
Okay.
My wife tells me. Facebook. Yeah. You can look up Heat Preacher on Facebook. Give us a like. We will post on Instagram and Facebook when we're having a show. So if it's something where you like it and you would like to come see us somewhere else, you know, we'll be playing in the Triangle. You know, we usually play every, you know, couple months, depending on where you're at. So.
Okay.
But yeah, so that's where I know to find us. But yeah, if you type in Heat Preacher Band into Google, I'm sure everything should pop up.
Okay, awesome. Well, look, JD, thank you so much. Appreciate you coming on, and I'll come introduce myself at Carolina Indie Fest.
Thanks, Gordon. Yeah, I really appreciate you taking the time to sit down with me, and you know, thanks for making it work. I appreciate you putting all this together, and yeah, I'm excited to see you in person. Excited to see everybody at the festival.
Shape begins, haze there.
sharp stare, thoughts bare. Baby, do you love me?
Next interview is with Sherlette Ammons of Durham. Sherlette Ammons plays Carolina Indie Fest at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford at 4:15 p.m. on Saturday, September 30th. Here's Earth Intro by Sherlette Ammons. After this interview, I'll play Language Barrier to close out the episode.
Sherlette Ammons, who is playing second at Carolina Indie Fest. She's playing the second spot Saturday, September 30th. Sherlette, you're out of Durham, is that right?
Yep, I'm based in Durham, Gorton, but I am originally from Eastern North Carolina, a small town called Botankus, But okay. Most people probably know Mount Olive, where okay. we make pickles, which is, for people who are not from that area, Mount Olive, but from folks who are from there, I'm from Botankas.
Okay, I got you. Well, why don't you just start by kind of talking about your music and what it is you do? I listened to a bunch of it and I've got some thoughts about it some questions about it, but I'd really love to give people just the chance to kind of talk about what they do from their perspective.
Well, I think, first and foremost, I describe myself as a writer and a storyteller. And I think mm-hmm. that the storytelling and writing take on different mediums and genres. And as a musician, music is a tool in which that I use to tell stories. I'm very much, like I said, I grew up in Eastern North Carolina, grew up in the church. So my foundation musically is certainly gospel music and funk, soul, R&B, that I grew up listening to on the radio. And then later I got into, rock music and going to see local bands when I was living in Raleigh. And so all that kind of merges together and hopefully it all merges together to create this sound. I just enjoy being able to push boundaries and play with genre and not really feel beholden to genre as long as the message and the storytelling is true. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I listened to Language Barrier and that album, it blew my mind because it was so many different things, but it was so seamless. It's genre hopping is kind of hard because it can feel like things are shoehorned together, but that is not something I got out of your work at all. It all just fits so well together. And do you feel like that's just a kind of a function of being into so many things for so long?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. I think part of it is a function of being into so many things. And part of it is being a part of this, triangle music community mm-hmm. that spans a whole bunch of different genres. I quite often say that the music community in the triangle is a bit incestuous. I mean, we all play together. We all mm-hmm. borrow from each other. And so, my bass player may also play with Reese Palmer, who is a country musician and my drummer may also play with his Golden Messenger, who's more of Americana folk. And then, yeah. I might do a collaboration with somebody who has more of a rock sound or come from more of a rock background. So all that merged together gives us the opportunity to really play with genre in a way that feels authentic. And hopefully, you don't skip a beat when you listen to it or feel like we're trying to, mock or mock a genre or mock a sound. I feel like it's just the result of a whole bunch of people from different backgrounds and experiences coming together.
Yeah. You said something interesting, which really stood out to me, that kind of music is a tool for telling stories. And that's a way I've never thought of it, but it kind of blows my mind. And it comes back into this kind of mashup thing. Like, how do you know when you want to go in a rock direction or a folk direction or a hip hop direction or a dance direction? Is it part? Does it tie into the story you're telling, or is that separate?
Sometimes it ties into the story, and there's no one approach to entering the story, I guess, is part of it too. Like sometimes the approach is like with a particular line, like a lyric line. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the approach is with a particular musical melody line. I play bass in a closeted way. I don't play out much, but uh-huh. I play and I can compose basic rhythm, drum and bass tracks. And then I always have to get my fellas to help me add melody and stuff to it. So normally I start out with something that's pretty, like a pretty rhythmic something, either a pretty rhythmic lyric or a really, four bars of a bar or two of a really rhythmic bass line. And that's usually the way it starts for me.
Okay. I wanted to talk about this, like as I was listening to the record, I was curious about what your live setup is like. Obviously on the record, you've got all kinds of different instrumentation. How does this translate to a live show, and what does your band look like?
It's certainly changed over time. Right now, the band I'm playing with is five pieces, including me. There's my drummer is Brevin Hamden. I have a guitarist, Russell Favre, and another cat who plays guitar / keys / background vocals named Hugh Suazo. And then my man Chris Sharp is on bass, and then myself. And I do vocals, but I also have a couple vocal pedals that I manipulate live to like do some cool reverb stuff or like double some vocals, and just gives me something to do instead of just standing up there on stage looking at
people. Yeah, I've always wondered about that, being just the singer, what that must be like, because you don't have
uncomfortable
in front of you. It's mad uncomfortable. But you power through it.
Yeah, I was like, it's this or a tambourine. I need something. So, awesome. So yeah, I do the vocal pedals, and then I also, you know, maybe pick up a tambourine every now and then.
Okay. Okay. Talk about your recorded output. I noticed you had a few albums. It looked like the most recent thing was from 2016, unless I'm mistaken. But obviously there was a pandemic in there and a thing that slowed everybody down. But what are you working on that's new, or do you have anything coming down the pipe?
Right. Yeah, you're right. Language Barrier was the last full-length recorded thing that I did. Since then, I think I may have done like a little, couple guest spots. Like I know, and for time-wise, forgive me, I can't name the date, but I did a collab with Phil Cook and a song called Skin and Bones that he released. That was after Language Barrier. Mm-hmm. And I did a collaboration with our poet laureate, Miss Jackie Shelton Green.
Okay.
On her album of poetry, like I guess you would call it spoken word. Mm-hmm. And I've been working on a record since then, that I started writing right before COVID hit, and then COVID slowed everything down. And I guess it's, you know, the best part of it is that it taught me to write differently. I started, you know, having to do a lot of the stuff myself that I would normally do with a cohort of colleagues. And mm-hmm. so I basically wrote a whole record just by myself during lockdown.
Yeah.
And then we got together and recorded it collectively, but, you know, we have some stutter starts along the way. And I've done a lot of, tweaking and additional production to it, and just hadn't found the light of day yet, but I'm really proud of it. Hopefully it'll be out this year, early next year. It's called Spectacles.
Okay, great. I can't wait to
hear it. Yeah, so we just stay busy. And then there's stuff that we play live that I've not recorded at all, just because it just, I don't know, some things just seem like they just should only exist in that live space. And I'm fine with that if it feels like, you know, the truth.
Yeah. That's one of the things, the way you kind of bill yourself, you know, as a storyteller and as a poet, it makes me think about, there's got to be a lot of intentionality in what it is that you're singing. Does that always come first?
Yeah, I can't bullshit. I'm not good at that. I also don't want to be taken too seriously. If it, you know, I want to be able to talk about, you know, things that are, you know, like I like being able to be humorous and be, you know, I think part of the hip hop part of me is very attuned to being a skillful MC, which includes some wit and humor and,
yeah,
you know, wordplay, metaphor. The songwriter part of me is, you know, wants to, you know, use a great turn of phrase to make a larger point about some bigger life affecting thing. So I try to pull in all these particular skill sets in order to create something that always feels like that makes me feel like a well-rounded human being. Like, I don't want to be serious all the time. I don't want to be ridiculous all the time, but I want to be able to choose artistically when I can be either of the two.
Right, right. There's a couple things that always jump out at me about certain artists. And one is, if you're too funny, you get billed as a comedy act, even though humor is as legit an expression as anything else. And the other one is, if you're totally humorless, it's hard to have fun, you know? So it's cool to hear that you embrace both of those things.
Yeah, I got to have a good time with it. I mean, it's always work, and I try to impart that on people. But like I tell people all the time, by the time we play, that's not the work. The work is like trying to wrangle five people together to get in a room and rehearse for several days. But by the time we hit the stage to play for folks, we're up there to have a good time too.
Yeah, absolutely. You've already sort of answered a question that I had in looking at Language Barrier. You have all these guest artists on there, and I mean, I was blown away when I saw Michelle Neocello, the Indigo Girls, you know, all this stuff. Like, one, I was curious, like, how the hell do you make that happen? But two, I was curious about how important collaboration is for you. Obviously, you've sort of already said that you work with this band and that they bring a lot of the elements to it. But when you've got these other musicians that you're bringing in, are they just doing their thing? Do they have kind of carte blanche to go wherever they want? Or have you written stuff that you know they would sound good doing? How does that work?
Yeah, it's a little bit of all of that, I think, at different times. I mean, like with Dear Nora that Michelle is on, the song on Language Barrier that Michelle Negocello's on, I wrote that thinking the whole time, like, I would love for Michelle to sing this. And
yeah,
lo and behold. And the stuff with the Indigo Girls came about because we were touring with them. We were doing some opening dates with them. And I had originally just asked Emily, I originally just asked Amy to sing on it just because I was like, there's no way I can get both the Indigo Girls on this song. And Amy was like, well, I think it would be cooler if both me and Emily sang on it. And I'm like, okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, oh, sure.
Great idea. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think it's a little both. Like, you know, I can write a basic bass line, but I know I play with stronger musicians and more adept musicians than I am. So I write a basic bass line and then give it to my bass player and tell him to do his worst with it. And so that's, you know, the beauty of me is, like, I don't know everything. Like, why would I dare try to tell these, like, world-class musicians how to play their instrument? So I'm like, here's the base of what, here's my idea. Mm-hmm. Like, can you help me, like, add your knowledge to it and let's build it together and make the biggest idea possible with all our brain powers together?
Yeah, well, and that's, like, a really cool sign of, like, very small musical ego that you're able to take, like, your art, which is, like, a lot of people are precious about their art, and I think everybody does this, but you're willing to let go of it and let other people interpret it the way they will.
There's some parts that they know they can't touch, but then the parts that they can't, I'm very clear about, like, yeah, this is you, this, like, I trust you to handle this part, and then, you know, we find some symmetry that way.
Right. What's your live show like? You mentioned that there's things in the live experience that may never be recorded. Just talk about your performance a little bit.
I like to be loud. I like musically. I like big sounds. I like to be dynamic though. I like to play with tempo. I think about arrangement of, like, set lists a lot. Like, just what can keep people engaged. I do think there's some kind of interaction with particular tempos and sounds and dynamics that help keep people interested over the course of a 45 minute hour set. So, you know, just try to think of how to keep people engaged in the whole experience and look at the whole set list as one body. So we having two guitars is mad cool because I can have, like, the blues rhythm dude and then can have the shredder guy on the other end of that. Uh-huh. But I would say the bassist sonically is certainly, I want it to, you know, thump. I want it to be funky. I want it to sit in a really tight pocket. The rhythm being tight is, like, really extremely important to me. And fortunately, my drummer, Brevin Hamden, is also my musical director. So he knows me. He knows that that's, like, important to me. So we kind of craft our live show I try not to have too many down parts. I like for it to just keep going. I'll stop and say a few words as needed. But otherwise, I want to keep people moving and bobbing, and I want people to stay in it. So I try not to break that if I can help it.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, you know, I've got a friend who's, like, the band leader for this country singer, and I listened to an interview with him talking about just all the intricate things that they do to plan their performances. And it sounds like you have that element, and it's not something I'm familiar with coming from, like, a rock background and being in punk bands and stuff, but, like, that's really fascinating. Can you go into a little more depth about, like, those big decisions that kind of may hinge on little things?
Yeah. Well, one thing is, like, I'm a strong proponent of, like, just leave them wanting more. I don't like testing people's attention spans. Like, I will cut a song from a set list quick if I feel like I'm losing people, or if it feels like, you know, and I don't like to impose on other musicians. If there's folks who have to play after me or whatever, I try not to take up any of their time. I think it's just like a steward of the art. That's just the courtesy you give your fellow musicians. I love like, and this probably is more of it, also the hip hop side of me. I love just like a really tight groove that doesn't change.
Mm-hmm.
That I can just, you know, rap over or freestyle over. Also love undulant music that is has more of a singer songwriter vibe, like the song Language Barrier itself.
Yeah.
And I like, you know, sometimes I don't write all my music. Sometimes people send me music and instrumentals. And the cool part about that is that it takes me outside of what I know personally, and it challenges me. And then I get to think about, oh, how would we translate this live, and how would and does it sound, should it sound just like it does recorded, or are there elements that we can add given the arrangement of musicians and instruments that we have that can make it unique for the live experience? So yeah, I think about that shit all the time. Like, it's just like,
excellent.
Yeah, it's part, to me, it's part of the process of, to me, the music isn't made until you think about all these things, especially if you intend on presenting it live.
Yeah.
So I see this very much as part of the music making process.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, can you talk a little bit about how this event, this Carolina Indie Fest, got on your radar?
My booking folks sent it to me, and I was like, oh, that's cool. Like I said, I'm from Eastern North Carolina. I have a cousin who lives in down that way. And mm-hmm. So I hopefully my family get to finally see me play. And like, because normally nice. Play at odd real at nighttime at crazy hours. And
yeah.
And I'm cussing a lot. So this is, you know, I'm going to play a family friendly thing in the middle of the day. They have no excuse not to come.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's a cool event.
I'm excited about that. Yeah,
it's a cool event, and I think especially, particularly, like the hip hop element of your music is going to add something really cool that's been maybe a little bit absent prior to this year. So I'm really excited to see you play.
And you said you played it before yourself.
I have, yeah, and I'm playing right before you. So you're gonna show people what a pro looks like.
Now I'm gonna follow your lead.
But no, it's great. People, it's, you know, a lot of locals come out, but it brings in a lot of people from out of town. Like, increasingly every year, we're getting more and more people that are coming to this to check out not just the music, but the downtown. And I think you're going to have a good crowd. So
sweet. Awesome.
Did you want to just take an opportunity to tell people where they can find their music? I mean, I know it's on streaming services and all that, but if there's a website or a particular social channel that you want to push.
Cool. Yeah. Well, my website is just my name, charletteammons.com. All the info's there. I keep my tour dates listed there, and I try to like keep it fairly updated. So can always depend on that. And my Instagram is just charletteammons. I post a lot of reflections and stuff on that too. So those are the primary ways to reach out. And yeah, and I love when people, you know, stay in touch, and you can contact me through both of those channels.
Okay, excellent. Well, is there anything else you want to say before we wrap up?
No, just come out and hang out, and I look forward to meeting you in person and checking out your set as well.
She drew a map to show me where my people Lower, take your barriers down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down. Lower, take your barriers down, down, down.
I took a hand.
Said, no, take your barriers.